On today's program, Great Falls City Commissioner Tracy Houck updating us on what's going on in Great Falls, Montana. Nicole Maria Evans, curator of art at Paris Gibson Square Museum of Art, and artist Christina Roth inviting you to view a new art exhibition, Awakening in the One Heart Call Project. Welcome to Voices and Views. Good afternoon and welcome to Voices and Views. My name is Tom Halverson, and the City Commission is composed of a mayor elected for a two-year term and four commissioners who serve overlapping four-year terms. In Great Falls, municipal elections are held in the uneven-numbered years, and the mayor and the commissioners are elected at large on a nonpartisan basis. And on the phone today, I have one of those commissioners. I have Tracy Houck, City Commissioner for Great Falls. Good afternoon, Tracy.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Beautiful, beautiful day. Usually we meet in person in the studio, but obviously with the COVID-19, things are a little bit different. My first question would be, how is COVID-19 affecting the City Commission?
Well, that's a good question. We have made some changes. I didn't have a chance to tell you earlier, but a couple weeks ago, I actually got bucked off a horse, and so I have been actually homebound quite a bit this last couple weeks, not because of COVID, but simply because I just was not in the saddle the way I needed to be. So the city itself has reacted from COVID in a cautionary way, but I think in a very pragmatic way. We initially set up the ability to have Zoom meetings. We participated in Zoom when we had this threat that was uncertain at that time. And we've kind of settled into a routine now. We still meet twice a month on the first and third Tuesday, both in the work session and for the regular City Commission. We hold both of them in the City Commission chambers at the Civic Center. And yet we allow now for people to call in and have public comment, which has really been something that probably could have been done sooner, but we didn't have the money or the ability to institute that infrastructure. And what makes it so much nicer now is you can still come and speak in front of the commission. We have everybody socially distanced in these commission chambers, and we have flow over into other rooms at the Civic Center. But this gives people a chance that need to protect themselves and be protected from others, the opportunity to call in at various times on every single issue on that commission agenda. So you don't have to come down to the Civic Center. You don't have to sit for 2 hours if you're unable to do so.
Can you give us an idea, the public radio listeners, what's on the table in front of the City Commission right now? What are you guys kind of working on?
You know, we've looked at a whole bunch of different things. We had a pretty big work session just recently on whether or not we would pursue adopting a non-discriminatory ordinance for sexual identity and gender issues. And we decided that with recent national legal opinions that had been done at the Supreme Court level, that we didn't have to institute that NDO, but we are going to go through and draft a resolution that allows all of our businesses and all of our citizens to understand that we take discrimination pretty serious in our community, and we don't allow it. We don't want to tolerate it. We want to be a community that's culturally rich and inviting and inclusive. And so that resolution will be focused not just in one particular area, but it'll cover ageism, it'll cover race, it will cover sexual identifications. So I think that's the focus, is going back to what do we want our community to look like? How do we want to operate? What do we want to be known for? A couple years ago, I sat with the mayor and key stakeholders in our community. And we talked about, why doesn't Great Falls grow? Why do we kind of have this stalemate sometimes? And one of the things that we identified is that, you know what, Great Falls doesn't really have an identity that we all put on our t-shirt. And when I say that, it's like, how do we brand ourselves? When you go to Missoula, you're a grizzly. When you go to Bozeman, you're a bobcat. We're in your Great Falls. Who are we? What are we? What do we fight for? Everybody knows who Butte people are, right?
Right.
So how do we show a sense of pride in our community? And so that's some of the things that we're looking for, is we want to be known as being a solid place to do business, that we have good schools that people want to come to, you know, and that they'll bring their children. We want to be able to be known for an open and accessible government. We want to be known as excellent public services, diversified economy. So I think that's some of the stuff that we are always looking towards. We've had some discussion recently. We did a zone change that perhaps may be a little bit of a burden on all of us, and I'll explain that. We've got people who bought the Milwaukee Depot down there on River Drive, and they are going to build just this incredible facility down there. It'll have condos that will overlook the river. It will have some shopping and some dining inside of it. And there'll probably be about 6 months of traffic on River Drive. And I can just see it now, as people will complain that their commute is disrupted. And I get that, but, you know, we don't like our routines to be interrupted. But the payout of our community will be huge. One of the number one things we consistently see in our community is that we don't have the housing market that matches our workforce. So how do we get more affordable housing in here? How do we get a chance to take, you know, our entry-level housing and expand it? So as you grow as a family, as you get promotions, as your family grows, how do you grow into the next house? Where is that next house? So we've been looking at a few of those things. You had mentioned and asked before we started talking today just about this wonderful opportunity to get a new indoor pool.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, talk about luck, talk about serendipity, and talk about having a stellar team in our community that we're ready to go. And I say all that, let me explain a little bit in the fact that when we did our park master plan, we asked what was important to our community. Indoor swimming was definitely at the top of that list, but the natatorium had so many issues. We were hoping that we could come up with a 5 or 10 year plan to build another indoor pool. Unfortunately, problems with the natatorium's physical structure made it so the commission had to make a really hard decision. We had to close the natatorium before we had something to replace it. And we weren't even sure if replacing it would make sense monetarily. So that's one of those tough ones that the commission gets put in front of them. You're kind of darned if you do and darned if you don't, because it's something our community has asked for, but we don't know how to pay for it. And we were all set to be pursuing that, trying to come up with a way. We've visited other indoor pools. We've researched why indoor pools close and things like that. And we were kind of stuck in a hard spot. And then nationally, this grant became available in like May timeframe. And we quickly pulled together a team. We were very lucky. We had some local partners, TD&H Engineering and LPW Architects are two of the ones that I can recall off the top of my head. They actually gave countless hours and times to help us come up with an idea of how much something would cost and if it was even feasible. And they donated all of that time back to our community for free. We submitted our application. I've never seen a federal application get put together so quickly. We had over 165 national applications, and we were one of the ones that were chosen. Wow. So what happened is we will receive $10 million in dollars from the feds, and then we will have to match $10 million to build this structure. And we have the ability to do that because it's not a one-time. We don't have to make that payment at one point in time. So we can use some of the money that we had originally set aside for our pools and some of the money that was put into our park plan, and we will be able to match that. And we feel pretty confident that going forward, we will be able to sustain this because of the fact that it's already been physically paid for. We're not going to be carrying a mortgage on it. And we are not just building a swimming pool. There'll be multiple swimming pools in this new facility as we are putting together the plan right now. And there'll be other recreational activity that takes place. So we all know that a pool by itself doesn't work, but when you have recreational activity that happens with it, then you will be able to sustain it. And this particular grant was given to us, so Malmstrom and the Mang will be able to do specific training there. And so they won't just have free access to it. Again, it'll be managed by the city, and we'll be able to charge for services. But now, all of a sudden, we will have a state-of-the-art aquatic center that gives us a chance to train our first responders. And I think that that's something that often gets lost in this conversation about, you know, do we need an indoor pool? Do people really need to swim? All of that aside, let's not forget that we are going to be able to build a facility that will train our first responders. We've always had deaths on our river and our waterways every year. This year was no exception. And the fact that we can be training underwater and rescue throughout the entire year is a coup for all of us. So that's kind of my take on that.
Talk about a win-win situation. You know how many people you're going to make happy bringing a pool in, in the scope that you're talking about?
Well, I take a look at it from the disability community. That's another wonderful thing that we often don't talk about very much, but it's definitely something to be recognized. We have a medical community here. We have people that live in our community because we have some wonderful providers, both Benefis and the Great Falls Clinic, and then our smaller partners. You know, people live here because of the access to medical care. We also have the state's deaf and blind school, and the fact that we have parents that have children of young ages that can learn to swim. And the fact that we can have Special Olympics and we can have folks from Malmstrom. And now we haven't had a master's swim program for adults for quite a few years. And Benefis has been doing some of that at the peak. And now we'll be able to expand that program. So it will open up the doors for, as we call it, recreational tourism. Yeah. So we'll be able to have swim meets in Great Falls. Again, we'll be able to have people here, large teams, for 3 or 4 days. So that will also boost our hotel and our restaurant economy. So I haven't figured out where there's a negative in this aquatic center. Right. So I'm super excited about it. And I just applaud everybody that was able to set something aside and pick up a pencil and help draft it this summer in order for us to get it in on its deadline. And then now the award letter came rather quickly, and we accepted all of our bids. They were opened up, and we're in the process of picking somebody to actually now be, I guess, our contractor and go from there.
I thought about how this is also going to help out the schools, like you mentioned, maybe with swim meets and the fact that Great Falls is kind of the center of Montana, no knock to Lewistown, but the center of Montana and the economy benefits. I'm just kind of curious, do you have any idea when this is going to be completed?
Well, we will award and start moving forward probably about the 1st of October, I think. So just depending on who can build and all of that, my guess it will be open in 2022, maybe 2021, but most definitely 2022.
What about the location?
Well, we're working on that. There's a couple of opportunities. I'm fairly certain at this point in time, unless something comes back with soil and that, it'll be out near the soccer park, near the base. It'll be on a bus line, so it will be accessible to all of our community. And I just have to say, as a former swim mom, I'm one of those moms that made sure a team got all the way to Hardin for a state swim meet. And hats off to Hardin for being able to do that and host us all. But talk about a burden on Kalispell. I mean, you are correct.
Sure.
It is hard when some of these school teams have to travel 8-10 hours just to compete. If there's a way that we can have a facility that will help them be able to compete and create an equal or at least an almost equal travel distance, that'll be wonderful.
Yes, that's some really, really exciting news. But in the meantime, Great Falls is a great place to live. We have other things going on. We have 57 parks. Do you want to comment on some of the other beautiful things in Great Falls?
Well, I often visit the other communities across Montana, and I try to keep an open eye on what do other communities have that we don't, and what do we have that other communities don't. And I think to myself, what a wonderful community that we live in. We have a vibrant downtown. It has really changed over the last 3 years. I can remember 5 years ago, you couldn't find local music. And now there's probably not an establishment that hasn't had local music. We have very friendly and open restaurants. The fact that you can take children to places like the Mighty Mo and have live music, I think exposing children to music and plays and activities, that's always a thing to do, being able to have culture. I see that the Great Falls Symphony is offering a free concert series this year because of COVID, and that they're going to have their concerts online. What a wonderful opportunity for our children to do that. Inside our city's infrastructure, we have our golf courses, we have outdoor pools, things of that nature, but we maintain over 50 parks in our community. And I've really been excited. I have a park that's just a block and a half from my house. And before COVID, I very seldom saw children out in that park. And since COVID, I think that's been one of the benefits. I see children playing out there all the time. And I see kids in my neighborhood doing sidewalk chalk and art and things of that nature. Take a look downtown. I tell families, if you're just going back and forth to school and work and you're driving up and down 10th, that's one thing. But you have to take a moment and drive downtown and park your car and walk around and look at all of the mural art. The fact that we have these just astonishing 30-foot-high murals that, you know, Miss Linda's dance studio has a mural that I think is 75 feet wide, yeah. 30 feet tall. You know, get out and see all of our murals. Downtown is just vibrant. There's the cool tiger and the blue heron and the butterfly wings, you know, and then, you know, take your kids and give them some ice cream or some candy from downtown. Or there's just so many things to do that can do. And you and I were talking about, well, you know, not everybody wants to do that right now. Not everybody feels comfortable with COVID going inside the stores. And I have been recommending to folks, you can still get out and walk and not be come in contact with folks. You can still walk downtown and window shop. You know, get out and do some of those things that will help you feel normal. Mm-hmm. You know, I've heard from senior citizens that they haven't left their house in months, and that's not healthy, too. We live in an area where you can get in to a car and you can drive to the Great Falls. We're just a quick, 25-minute drive to the Great Falls. You can experience that. My children have been funny. So we try not to stay socially distancing in our household because we don't want to socially distance. I mean, who wants to be socially isolated? So we keep reinforcing the word physically distant.
Okay.
You know, how can we get out and still maintain our own mental health and yet create a safe environment for our physical health? And that's us making that decision to be physically distant, not socially distant. So I talk all the time. You can take a walk around your block. You can see what your neighbors are doing in their front yards and who's got better landscaping than others. I'm one of those that have not landscaped very well this year at all. But I think there's ways for us all to get out and take some pride in our community. We've got a young architect at LPW. He has just really been pushing for all of us to get out and fill one bag of trash in from our community. And isn't that a great idea? You know, if you can just go outside and those hedgerows right now and, you know, back by our dumpsters and things like that. So do something that makes you feel good right now and give back. Going back to what I was saying earlier, why are we proud to live in Great Falls? Is it because we have a job here, or is it because we're choosing to live here? And I hope that more and more people say they're choosing to live in Great Falls. I'm hoping that, you know, we all have a passion for why we're here.
You're listening to Voices and Views. My name is Tom Halverson, and on the phone today I have City Commissioner of Great Falls, Tracy Houck, talking about downtown Great Falls. What's going on with the parking meters? I've been down there a few times, and nobody's charging for the parking meters.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, and people don't understand the full backstory on that. So earlier this summer, we had somebody break in and steal keys to the parking meters. And so we had to remove them. And it has cost us a loss of revenue, but our parking meters are so antiquated that the cost to rekey them all was something that we couldn't afford. So we have been moving forward on that, seeing how we can replace them and get back into operation. I've heard a couple people say with sarcasm, how come the city only had one key? Well, the city did not have one key. We had more than one key. The problem was it was the master key. Uh-huh. So even if we just would have replaced that one, it wouldn't have made a difference. Whoever ended up with that key ring would have been able to empty out every single parking meter and get the coinage inside of it. So we are working through that, and we will be getting a new system in place. So until then, we're not charging for parking, but they are still policing how long you are in one spot. So it's free to park downtown, but it's still only a 2-hour limit. So you can't take your car down there and park all day long. And people always ask, why can't we have free parking? And the problem with that is it's not so much about the free parking. It's about not allowing people to park for more than 2 hours. People don't understand how many people work downtown and how many people live downtown. And if we allowed for unlimited parking, people that wanted to come down to eat, dine, in or out, or play, shop, they would never get a parking spot. Mm-hmm. So usually the people who want us to make sure that we have parking regulations are the people who offer the dining and the retail establishment, because they want that parking to rotate and be right. available for the people that plan to use their establishment.
That makes sense. It's something I never knew. So some new information. How about, this is kind of a touchy subject, but the defund the police movement that seems to be gripping some of the nation. Have you heard anything on that? Has Great Falls been approached by any groups or organizations?
You know, we talk about this a lot. Interestingly, we had already started talking about this before the nation started talking about it. We recognize in our community that we have a higher than what we were used to crime. And I think there's not, I would be hard pressed to say that there isn't one person in Great Falls that hasn't been impacted by crime in the last couple years. But at what level is that crime? And how do we respond to it? And the question is, do we need more police officers? And our police have come to the table. We've had some great conversations. We held a very large public forum back, I think it was in early March, end of February, on what can our community be doing better. And it's not about one particular response. It's about having a multifaceted response that's steeped in best practices. And I think that's really important. Our police officers are telling us, you know, here is, you know, what's going on with the people we're responding to and the arrests and things like that. So in my humble opinion, not having my commissioner hat on, but simply a mom and a woman and a person who's living in our community who's worked with various nonprofits, our biggest problem right now is that we have people who are making poor choices. We have a lot of mental health issues in our community. We see that all across the nation. We all sit around and tell stories that if I were to do something like the young person who might be getting arrested would have done, we would have said it wouldn't be, you know, just never would have been tolerated. And da, 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 da.
Sure, sure.
So why are we having kids, and I say kids, but people of all ages? Is it a drug problem? Is it a mental health problem? And that is the approach our community is taking, is that arresting people and putting them in jail is a piece of our multifaceted approach, but it can't be the only piece. Mm-hmm. And so we have done some really good innovative projects where we are linking our police department to our mental health center, and we have case management, and we have task force, and we have people who are doing ride-alongs. We've really seen a lot of changes at the Great Falls Public Library with Susie McIntyre as our new director. She's done a phenomenal job in taking a look at how to make sure that we are approaching our homeless population. I just think that we have an interesting predicament in our community that is being replicated all across the nation, but how do we approach it? And we are looking at that. We've been looking at different ways. We're not necessarily saying defund our police. I think we're saying more of fund our police right now. Our police officers should be police officers. Mm-hmm. So they need to be responding in a moment of crisis. They shouldn't be having to provide as much mental health triage. So the question is, where do people get mental health? where do people get to the point where we're building assets? I ran a prevention program in Great Falls years ago, and we talked about what do our children need? How do we build resiliency in our young people? How do we build them up so we won't have a generation in the upcoming years that have more problems and more issues? How do we tell kids not to use drugs and alcohol? It's hard to tell kids not to use drugs and alcohol when the adults telling them are using drugs and alcohol.
Right.
So I think that we will continue to see an evolution of how we provide services, how we provide crisis intervention, and we continue to support our police department. We have a lot of faith in them, and we will continue to address our needs. I think that it's ever moving.
Now, I had heard that some citizens in Great Falls have actually brought down and done nice things for the police. Do you know what I'm talking about? Coming down and bringing cookies and things like that?
Yeah, our police department's been treated well in our community. They get treats all the time. They get drive-bys. They get beautiful thank you cards and letters. We've done the back, the blue. You know, but we've also taken it very seriously that there is a race issue that the nation is talking about. And so we're not turning a blind eye. We don't say that that doesn't happen in Great Falls, that we've got perfect police. What we are saying is we want to always be striving to be better. Our city manager has been working with a special task force in identifying and building relations with the African-American community. We're asking what we can be doing better, how we can be better, what on both sides needs to be done. But we are also addressing it with our Native American community from Chief Bowen and our police department. We don't ever want to say that we're perfect. We are constantly out there having conversations and trying to improve it. And I'm sure that anybody at any point in time can point to us one or two incidents and say, well, this happened. And I would not disagree with that. But when you look to see how many crime reports we have in 2020 and 2019 compared to what we had 5 years ago, I would like to see us hire six more officers. We could easily hire six more officers, but the funding for six more officers comes out of the general fund. We don't generate enough in taxes to fund our police department. I know people all the time, you know, complain when taxes go up. I don't like it when taxes go up. None of us do. But then we have to go back and ask the community, what do you want your money to go to? They always say police and fire. And so the question is, okay, so we're going to raise your taxes so we can afford the police and fire. And they're like, no, you can't do that. Well, I don't think people often realize that we don't fund them completely. So we could use more money. Mm-hmm. Will we have to ask for a public safety levy in the next couple years? It's quite possible. I always tell people, if you want to have a little fun and you really like budgets, and those two words, fun and budgets, don't often go together, you can go out to the City of Great Falls website, which is greatfallsmt.net, and you can play with the budget. We have a whole section on there that you can, it generates, and then you can say, no, I would do this. What if I put this much money here? Or what if we don't fund the police? How much money would we save? Or what if we don't do this? What if we put all the money here? You know, we want to hire, you know, more lifeguards, or, you know, whatever you want to kind of go through. You can do that. So it's called the Budget Simulator, and it's a fun little exercise. Oh. And so I just always encourage people, there might be somebody that wants to play with that, that could come back to us and say, holy cow, did you ever consider this? We want to have that dialogue. That's the beauty of having four commissioners and a mayor, is that we open up that dialogue and we ask people to share their input.
Now, I have another question. I'm kind of curious how our relationship is with Malmstrom Air Force Base, and does the city commission work with them or have any contact with them?
That's a great question. We actually have a lot of contact with them. Our city manager meets with our base commander quite regularly, and both in an informal and a formal capacity. And so we often are having conversations, you know, how are things going out there? What, you know, what is going on? How can we support you? And vice versa. So it's a very fluid conversation that takes place. Malmstrom is a key component to our community. And I think the fact that we've built those partnerships and that they're maintained is really important. And it's just not Malmstrom. I came to Great Falls because of Malmstrom, and so that support for me is just natural to give them. But I'm constantly reminding folks that the Air National Guard is also huge, and we don't just have reservists that come in and play guard on the weekend, but we have a military compound at the airport that's also fully staffed 7 days a week. And so we're very fortunate that we are flanked in this community by two, you know, incredible security options. And they contribute to our economy, and they bring in folks from all over, and their spouses and their children then work in our community. So we've been able to build a diversity. I think, you know, the difference is when you see a military person in uniform, you immediately feel safe and you have different interactions with them. And I just ask all of our community to check their own prejudice, and that when you're interacting with somebody who's not in uniform, to also welcome our community members.
And Malmstrom, they do so much for the community as far as volunteer service. I think that gets lost in being recognized sometimes. Tracy, I'm just wondering, is there anything we've forgotten about, or how about looking to the future of Great Falls? Do you see anything, any vision? Is anything you're looking forward to, that type of thing?
Well, that's an excellent question. So I will say, when we talk about where we're going in the next couple years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, I really think that all of the partnerships that are in place right now, we're working on some wayfinding that will happen throughout our city. And, you know, you go to other communities and you kind of automatically go, oh, I can't wait to go to Great Falls because, you know, we are the home to the shortest river. And people are like, what? I didn't know that. I'm like, what? The Roe River at Giant Springs is the shortest river. And do you know that we are home to, you know, the Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center, the Charlie Russell Museum, that we have, you know, the largest Western wear shop in Montana at Hoagland's? How do we get people to know all of these iconic things that happen in our community? Because what Great Falls has not done well is we don't tell our story very well. And so you will start to see that we are in the process of telling our story. And I think that that will help build community pride. I want people to say they come to Great Falls because we have the best medical, that we have the best school system, we have the most affordable housing, and that we have the best after-work recreation. Whether we get on the River's Edge Trail and we bike, or we walk, or if we're on the Missouri in a kayak, or we're playing at the dog park, or we're at our two fall courses. Are we in some of our 50-plus parks? Are we playing pickleball? Are we not sports-minded and we're just going to a little library and we're picking up a book? You and I talked about that. Those little libraries are being cleaned right now. So there's constantly books that are in them and clean. So drop a book off, pick up a book, get out and experience our community. And if nothing else, I hope that in 5 years, when I ask somebody why they live in Great Falls, they say it's because it's a safe and an inviting place to live that is culturally rich and vibrant.
I do want to thank our guest today, Tracy Houck. She is our city commission, the Great Falls City Commissioner. Tracy, good luck in the future. I want to thank you so much for doing the interview, taking the time to do the interview, and best of luck with everything going forward.
Well, always a pleasure to talk to you and to talk about our community. If we had one thing we were known for, I tell people we've got a gorgeous T-Rex at Flag Hill. Go check that out.
All right. Thank you, Tracy. Welcome back to Voices and Views. My name is Tom Halverson, and with me on the phone today, I have Nicole Maria Evans, Curator of Art at the Paris Gibson Square Museum of Art, and I also have Christina Roth. She is an artist who will be opening up a new exhibit at the museum. Good afternoon to both of you.
Thank you. Good afternoon back to you.
And I think we'll start out with Nicole Maria Evans. Nicole, you've got a very exciting event coming, exhibit. Do you want to tell us all about it, please?
Yes, we're very lucky here to have Christina Roth. She is going to be, she is our featured exhibiting artist for quite a few months, from October to February 12th of next year. And her exhibition is titled Awakening and the One Heart Call Project, Building Community with the Voices of Our Hearts Through the Arts. And she's sitting here with us today, and she'll expand, of course, on that with you. But we are very excited to have her here in the community of Great Falls to present this project about humanity, connections, diversity, and unity, not to mention the artwork that she creates on her own about her experiences in life are quite interesting, and they affect, I think, visually in a way that connects to you emotionally. So it's a very important exhibition, and we're just blessed and grateful to have her here and present her to this community and her debuting this work she's been working on for 2 years.
Now, where did you get the concept? How did you come up with this? And, you know, specifically, well, to Christina, too. Christina,
yeah, I think I need to go back even to my younger years as a child. I was born in Germany, and I grew up in West Africa, Nigeria. And at a very early age, I was experiencing very beautiful situations and also very scary and horrific events in life. And I think that imprinted me. And then as I grew up, I realized that when you had conflict situations or misconceptions, that usually coming together through sharing food, through the arts and music or even sports, that these differences were eased and even, ironed out, because we all realized that we had similar dreams and fears, and that we all had one thing in common, which is our human heart. And then I think it imprinted me throughout my life as a person and as an artist when I finally had the courage to do what I'm doing now. And 2 years ago, energy shifted here in our country. I became a citizen in 2016, and there were a few situations where I was told to go back to the country I came from. And this is my home, this is my country, and I started reflecting and meditating of what it means to have heart and to reach out to one another on a deeper level. I was reflecting also what would have happened in me, someone telling me to go back to the country I came from, if my skin would not have been white, if my accent would have been deeper and really from a much different country, or if I would have worn a hijab or a different cultural garment, what would have happened in that situation? And so I started to reach out after the after meditating and reflecting, what does it mean to come together through your heart? And as an artist, my gift is to create art, and so I was guided to work through art and building community through the heart voice. And then the project began with connecting with students at the community school in Spokane, and the principal and teachers, after listening to my vision, invited me in to come and work with the students, and it all began recording heartbeats. And it was really wonderful to see that the students also realized, and teachers and staff, that we all have a very unique heartbeat and a very unique heart graph. And then the journey began and expanded to where we are today.
Now, is this something that maybe turned some heads or maybe changed a few opinions? And maybe talk about it a little bit more specific. What were some of these issues that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. I think what really touched me was the openness and kindness of the students with whom I started working to let me come into their world and sharing with me through art projects and also through reflections, poetry, writing, or music, how they felt about what it meant to them having heart. And being open and willing to step into the vision that I presented of the one heart, and not just, you know, heart as goody two shoes, happy, go, you know, happy, happy, happy situation. It is very, I mean, even when I read some of the reflections and look at some of the artwork, it really touches me deep in my heart and brings tears up. And because of the honesty and the directness, and the resolve how living life and at such a young age comes through what they are sharing. And I feel that they are not just in the future, our youth, our children, they are now. They take on maybe the role of being a guiding light or guiding us to maybe come back to a center, to realize that we are all human beings, that we can be kind, and that we are all interconnected, and not just among people, but also with our environment. There are so many little facets. I can't really point out one in particular. I think when you come and see the exhibition, you will understand why. I hope that I created that interconnection that is going to be shown, you know, in the art installations and artwork and the sound, and then community voices shared in. I was reaching out to members in the community who were sharing life events, memories that they had. And in my own life, oftentimes things shifted for me when I read a certain passage in a book or hear a song. And so I'm hoping to share that with the larger community when they are drawn or guided to click on one of the voices that are sharing a life story, that they can relate to it or realize someone else went through a similar situation and find hope in it and strength.
That layers that she's talking about is really a reflection of the work in the exhibition, because it comprises three galleries in the museum. And each one of the gallery spaces focuses on different topics that she's covered throughout the duration of this project. you know. So I think overall, when you come here, you're going to have an immersive experience where you are going to meet the people she met. You'll meet them virtually mm-hmm. through their voices, mm-hmm. through their stories, through mm-hmm. their art. You know, all of these things come together, and as you walk through, you'll see her work, and you'll engage, and you'll think, and you'll ponder how these works come together with theirs, and you'll see the very strong connection between her work and the student works and the installation pieces that invite the community members into the space to take a moment to reflect and think about how minuscule we are in terms of the vastness of the world that we live in, and how we actually are so similar to one another, mm-hmm. despite the differences that we feel that we are as a unique individual, we right. are actually quite similar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, I understand this is a virtual presentation. You don't want people to show up at the square?
Well, it's not that we don't want people to show up at the square. It's that we can only have a limited number. And so the best way to stay COVID safe is to have a virtual one. So the museum is open to the public to visit whenever they choose. They can come right now if they'd like to come and meet Christina and see the exhibition. But the typical community reception where we have music and you know, food and camaraderie and speaking in one another's spaces is not something that we can do right now. So we've prepared a really great virtual online presentation via Zoom and Facebook Live tonight at 5:30, where people will walk through the galleries with Christina, and she'll focus on three of her pieces. And if you're on Facebook, you can chime in to questionnaire, and the questions will come in to her so she can answer you.
Mm-hmm. Now, this isn't just a visual. I mean, when I'm reading this, it's a little bit more than that. It's art making, oral histories, choral performances, music and dance.
Yeah, and within the gallery space too, Christina has also worked with her community, and she's created a video where there you will see a few examples of the performances right. and the voices of different students, and so that we can all, as visitors, get an understanding of the work that she's been doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, were there any challenges or surprises that you learned along the way?
I would say as the project grew, it was probably more of a logistic challenge to connect with everyone and share, you know, when we had to come together. And the fabrication, actually, of some of the projects, I would share, you know, when people heard that I reached out to so many people, they said, oh, my gosh, how are you able to do this? And all of the creative voices coming together. There was no problem ever with any ego or any complication on that level. Everybody joined in from their heart level, and it was fantastic. It was just beautiful to also learn about all the different expressions that people use and choose to share what comes from their heart. I learned a lot about different mediums, and I really enjoyed seeing the collaboration coming together, and it felt like an encouragement on all levels. We all had that same, it almost felt like we were tapping into this maybe global or worldly zeitgeist of let's come together and do something together and support one another. And I feel it's just the beginning. This is just a starting point.
It sounds like there's no artist block, and sometimes you get to a point where it's hard to express yourself, but it sounds like you are full of energy and vision.
Well, you know, I will have to say something too, and everyone who knows me, I'm actually a total introvert. So if you would have told me 2 years ago that I would be doing this project and it would be growing this way. I would have looked at you with a big question mark in my face. But, you know, I feel, too, that this project allowed me to find my own voice even more than I thought, and allowed me to even go deeper within my own heart. And that is the inspirational maybe flame, or the source, the energy that's going to continue growing and giving me the sense, wow, maybe I found what I was supposed to be doing, you know, that kind of feeling. So I'm very grateful, and I feel really grateful for all the people that I met along the way that embraced the idea and the vision and helped make it happen. So
sounds like just an amazing project. We are running out of time. I just want to maybe get a recap from you and some final thoughts, please.
My final thoughts are that I'm very grateful that I have this opportunity here to show this One Heart Call vision. And my final thoughts are that I'm hoping to be able to bring in the people to the museum, be curious and explore, sharing their minds and their heart with me, you know, what they think, what they feel, and maybe feel inspired when they leave to do something on their own, and maybe something they wanted to do for a long time, and maybe feel encouraged to do it now, and maybe approach, the kindness, pull out the kindness to one another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, come together.
Come together, right.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that you will have a chance to come as well.
Yes.
And that maybe one of these days when I come back that we can meet in person.
Yes.
And I would love to hear your thoughts and your what you felt when you go through the exhibition.
That sounds like
I'll take you up on that.
Okay.
So how about a recap? When is this opening, and how long is it going to be at the square?
It actually opens today. Today is the opening day of the exhibition, and it runs through February 12th. So you can come to the square. It's free for anybody who would like to come visit. The square is always free, Paris Gibson Square Museum of Art. You can come and enjoy yourself, bring your family, experience the work that Christina has made, and become part of it.
And if someone might want more information, how can they get a hold of you?
Christina is going to speak a little bit about that on her end.
Yeah, so we will be launching the oneheartcall.com website today, and it's going to be an ongoing uploading of content to the website, and we will also describe how community can share with their own visions and voices and creative expressions coming from the heart. And then also Nicole here.
Yes, and of course for the museum, we also have her the information about the exhibition on our museum page, our website, at www.the-square.org, and our Facebook page as well, Paris Gibson Square Museum of Art Facebook page has lots of information about her exhibition as well as her own site that she's creating for her, I would say, artistic movement.
Very well said. I want to thank our guest today, Nicole Maria Evans, curator of art at the Paris Gibson Square Museum of Art. And I want to thank our guest, Christina Roth, an artist with One Heart Call Project. Again, good luck with your exhibit, and we'll have to talk to you again sometime down the road.
That would be nice. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Voices and Views is a news and public affairs program produced by KGPR and airs each Saturday from 4 until 5 p.m. If you have a news or public affairs topic you would like covered on the program, please let us know by calling us at 268-3739 or by emailing us at kgpr@gfcmsu.edu. Please join us each Saturday at 4 p.m. for Voices and Views on 89.9 KGPR.